Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Walden. My guest today is Christopher Barnes of Grape Collective, which is in New York. Great name.
Thank you, Monty.
How did you get the name? How did you go about getting the name?
I looked up all kinds of combinations of URLs that were available, and it seemed to kind of talk to what we were doing, which is getting a collective of writers who would be telling narrative stories around wine, around the grape. So Grape Collective, it kind of makes sense.
Okay, where did you found Grape Collective?
We founded Grape Collective 4 years ago.
And what did you do before then?
I was involved in a bunch of what I would call screwball media projects.
Elaborate.
I started a free daily newspaper in New York City called AM New York, which eventually we sold to the Tribune Company.
So free, so it was what? It was just funded by advertising within the newspaper?
Exactly. So we produced about 400,000 copies a day, and people would get their daily news and not have to pay for it.
I mean, that must have been a bit stressful.
It was actually exhilarating. It was tremendous fun, and you're shaking things up. You're going against the big guys and trying to do something new and different and working with people who are very passionate. So it was a great time.
But did you steal anybody's market share? Was anybody getting really a bit sort of annoyed and grumpy with you and say, hey, this guy, we don't like this little smart guy coming along and breaking up our kind of monopoly, if you like?
Of course.
So how do you handle that kind of pressure?
Well,
do you take it as a compliment? That,
you know, I don't really think of it as pressure. You know, I mean, it's going to work, it's doing business, but if you're not shaking things up, if you're not competing, then if you're in that business, you're probably doing something wrong. So
where does the journalism gene come from in your body?
Well, my dad was a foreign correspondent, so he was with Newsweek for many, many years, and he worked for the Times in London, and he worked for US News and World Report, other places too. I think the LA Times.
Did you ever think about another career apart from, obviously, your first big business was this journalism newspaper? Did you ever think of doing something else before then, or was it always your kind of destiny to get into that field?
No, I was in the movie business for a few years.
Uh-huh.
I did a film and English degree at the University of East Anglia in Norwich in the UK. And I moved to Hollywood and worked behind the scenes on some movies. So
when you say behind the scenes, were you making the tea or were you actually doing stuff?
I was the assistant location manager on Sketch Artist 2 with Jeff Fahey and Courtney Cox, which, if you've never seen it, is a cracker. And even better than that was Pumpkinhead 2, which included the former president's brother, Roger Clinton, as the mayor, and he played a song, which was quite terrific. So I was involved in that. I got a distribution credit on that one. But some people say that it's better than Pumpkinhead 1. It's disputable.
Yeah, I think the film critics will be arguing about that one for many years to come.
Many years.
So you sold your newspaper and you founded Grape Collective.
Yeah, Grape Collective. I was interested in doing a media project that was digital, that didn't rely on subscriptions or advertising. And I thought wine was very interesting because you had a media landscape that was sort of dominated by very traditional companies that had paywalls in terms of their online presence. And I didn't feel we're catering to a younger audience. So they do a great job of focusing on kind of collectors and older wine aficionados, but they weren't focused on the sort of the younger consumer who's developing an interest in wine. And I thought there was a real opportunity to create something for that audience. And at the same time, there's also a problem with wine journalism in the sense that if you read the New York Times wine column and you want to buy the wines that they write about, it's often impossible. They're out of vintage or you can't get them or for whatever reason. So I thought it would be interesting to create a narrative focused online wine magazine with really great writers and then make the connection so people can then try the wines. So we're not finding a wine we want to sell and then getting somebody to write about it, but we're finding great writers who are excited about stories, and then we're bringing the wines in and making that connection. So you can read about something or watch a short video and then try the wines.
Okay, so when you talk about a narrative, is it just the classic, oh, you know, granddad founded the vineyard and then his son took over and now his third generation is doing it and he's gone organic or whatever? Is it that kind of thing you talk about as a narrative, or is it a little bit more than that?
Well, I think there are a lot of great stories in the wine world. And, you know, one of the problems is when you walk into a wine shop, there's, you know, 700 bottles on a wall that have names that most people can't pronounce. And most of them have really compelling stories about them, but you just don't know what they are, and you don't know how to choose, and you don't know what you like. So there are these wonderful journalists who are out there who are constantly encountering interesting people and interesting subjects. And instead of kind of going through the approach of giving it a numerical score, which I think is a little bit dated in some respects, telling the story of these wines and telling the story of the passion of the winemakers and the area and the families and the traditions. And some of it goes to the level of cliche that you talked about. But in many cases, you get really fascinating people that are doing fascinating things. And we had Eric Texier in, who's a French natural winemaker, and recently telling his story. And, you know, he's been doing it for a long time. And I think he took a lot of personal risks to make wine in a specific style that doesn't have the coolness that it does now. And that's interesting. And I think the wines are very interesting too.
So on your website, greatcollective.com, as well as being able to read articles, you do like movies as well and film stuff. Does that dates obviously from your days in film, but how do you do that? Do you hire a camera crew with like six or seven people, sound engineers, or what? How do you make these films?
It's guerrilla filmmaking.
Guerrilla filmmaking.
So we have a couple of people that do video that we work with. I do some of the video as well, and we shoot very quickly on a very tight schedule. But I mean, the beautiful thing is that you have digital cameras right now that produce quality that, you know, you would have a 15-man team, you know, 15 years ago doing that thing. And it's just, it's wonderful, wonderful video. And the thing that we're very excited about now is 360 video. So you can take a video of a winemaker in his location, in his barrel room, in his vineyards, walking around, and cut, you know, a 60-second shot of that, splice it together, put an audio of him talking about it, and then put the goggles on, and you're literally there. You know, no one can replicate the experience of walking through a vineyard with a winemaker on a beautiful day in Tuscany, but how do you get close to that? And I think the 360 stuff is really interesting right now. And, you know, you put the goggles on, you experience the 360, you can feel soil samples, you can taste the wine, and it brings you much closer to the wine in the winery than if you just walk into a shop and pick a bottle off a wall, for sure.
Yeah, I'd just say that Christopher and I, we did do some filming together, but it was last year in Tuscany, and you had a drone, if I remember. I think it hit a very large cypress tree, never to return to America again. When you talk about experiential, you have a wine shop in Manhattan, right?
Yes, we kind of call it a wine studio.
A wine studio, okay. Yeah. So talk about, just give me a bit more about this soil, because when you came walking around Brunello, for example, you kept on stopping and picking up bits of dirt and putting them in a jar. I'm like, what the hell is this guy doing? Why do you do that?
Well, I think it's trying to get back to this idea that the wines come from a place. And when somebody's in our wine studio, they're able to look at a photography display around a specific wine. They're able to pick up soil from the wine. They're able to take an interview or an article about the wine and read about it. So we're trying to build a relationship with the person, with the place, with the story, which is, you know, transcends the normal experience of purchasing in a wine store. We feel it creates an excitement and an enjoyment. It brings wine to life in people's lives. And, you know, with all the negativity in the world, if you can create a little bit of joy, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a great idea, because traditionally wine merchants, just if you're lucky, they may let you taste the wine, but that's not always a given. And the idea of you actually being able to hold a piece of Tuscany in your hand when you're in the middle of a built-up city like New York, pretty interesting. I mean, do they actually pick up the jar, or do they actually want to touch the soil? Do they not say it's dirty, or they can go and wash their hands, or are they actually just kind of pretty relaxed about it? Because we kind of think, you know, some people might be a little bit, that's a bit icky.
We have some pretty interesting soils. Kimmeridgian limestone from Sancerre and Chablis and Ruy that have the fossils sticking out of them. And there's something kind of exciting about picking that up and understanding that the bottle that you're about to drink comes from there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, people love it.
So tell us about the American wine market at the moment, with particular reference to Italy. That sounds a bit like an exam question, but in terms of, you know, what are the hot wines among the New York Soms from Italy? What's hot in California in terms of Italian wine? What's going on?
I mean, I think certainly Etna is an area that people are focusing on a lot. Volcanic wines or something that's become an area of interest. Barolo is the classic. Brunello is probably kind of second behind Barolo in terms of the classics. And then you have, I think, a lot of people who are super interested in native grapes and exploring, and, you know, like Pigato from Liguria, which has a sort of very interesting Vermentino-like quality, but it has a bit more salinity to it maybe. And, you know, understanding the native grapes and where they're from. And I think there's definitely a lot more curiosity in wine and in consumers, especially younger consumers. And if you're able to sell wines in the sort of, you know, call it $15 to $25 range that are expressive of native grapes and of different regions, people really embrace that.
So if that's price point, is that seen as an everyday wine, or is it a step above an everyday wine, just for people that don't live in America?
I would say $10 to $20 is an everyday wine. When you go sort of $20 to $25, that's a wine that you might have on the weekend or something like that. But it's a wine that is in most people's price range. When you start talking about Barolo or Brunello, for most people, it becomes a special occasion wine. But, you know, if you're able to get a Pigato for $18, $19 or something like that, then, you know, most people will take a chance on it for sure.
Okay, final question. If you had to leave New York and had to come and live in Italy, which region would you choose and why?
Boy, that's a tough one.
Finally got him.
Yeah, I would have to say probably Tuscany, just because I've been there the most. But I'm very excited to be traveling to the Marche region this summer, because one of my very close friends, his family is from there. And
it's a beautiful area. It's unspoiled. It's not really on a main motorway track, so it's got Italy's best white wine, great Verdicchio, fantastic seafood, lovely beaches.
It's got everything.
I work for the Verdicchio Tourist Board, basically. I have a 15-year contract. No, I'm joking.
It's great wine.
It's great that you say that. I mean, most people would say, they're either going to say Piemonte or like kind of Brunello, Tuscany, that kind of thing, you know, lifestyle. Or they're going to say Sicily for the volcanic stuff. It's great that you say Marche. Fantastic. I'm a Marche fan. Good guy. That's the reason I like you. Just added another reason. Christopher Barnes from Great Collective in New York, thanks very much for coming in. We're at school together, known you for a long time. You're a great guy, and you're a super, super, super talented and professional journalist. Amazing.
Great. Thank
to
you,
have
Monty.
You. Great to have you in. Thanks.
Thank you, Monty.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.